Disco sucks. And we're never gonna let them forget it. They're not gonna shove it down our throats. We rock and rollers will resist, and we will triumph. All right, you ready? We're gonna count to three and then go boom.
They blew up the disco records.
Back in the ballpark, and I'm sure glad, and I hope they don't let you people see what's going on here at Comiskey Park. One of the saddest sights I've ever seen in a ballpark in my life. This garbage of demolishing a record has turned into a fiasco.
A very discouraged Jimmy Pearsall. Again, Chicago had this conversation a couple of weeks ago when the Sox did a promotion to honor the disco demolition of 40 years ago, but it's actually today, 40 years ago, that it happened. And when we were all talking about it, I tried to get Mike Veck on to share his thoughts with us, and we weren't able to connect. We were today, so the timing is going to work out after all. Hey, Mike, it's John. You're on WGN in Chicago. How are you?
I am well, thank you. I've enjoyed listening to a couple of those missives to you via this great technology. Some of those folks, they can really speak their mind, can't they, when you can't see their face?
Well, they...
I'm sorry.
Trying to have a serious conversation with you, Mike Veck. Mike, what is your relationship with the St. Paul Saints baseball team?
I'm a co-owner.
Co-owner of the team. And you are Mike Veck, so you are the son of the Veck that owned the Chicago White Sox back in the day then, right?
Yes, the grandson of the man who ran the Cubs back in the day. So we had our foot in both camps.
So Bill Veck and Mike Veck. And when, Mike, what was your position with the White Sox 40 years ago?
I was the marketing director and assistant business manager, as I recall.
Whose idea was disco demolition?
In 1977, it was mine is the short answer. In 1977, we did a disco promotion tied in with Jimmy Rittenberg at Faces and all of the clubs in Chicago that were playing disco music. And we retired to Miller's Pub. And around 3 in the morning, Jeff Schwartz, who was a record plugger at the time, said to me, "We ought to do a night for people who just love old-fashioned rock and roll." And we had a big laugh about it. I said, yeah, we ought to call it anti-disco night or something. And 2 years later, Jeff Schwartz called me up, and he said, there's a guy who just blew up a disco record on WLUP named Steve Dahl. You remember that anti-disco night? I said, yeah. And so that was it. I knocked on the door at WLUP, had never heard Steve, never met him. And back in those days, he was working 6 to 10, and at 10:05, I knocked on the studio door and said, "You want to try that in person at Comiskey Park for one of our teen nights?" And he said, "No, I did one in Indiana a couple weeks ago at a shopping center. It didn't work so well." I said, "Well, maybe we can figure this out." So that was how disco demolition came about.
Did you have an opinion about disco music per se yourself?
The day I got out of Loyola, I joined a rock and roll band and spent almost 4 years on the road. And the moment I heard the first disco record, which for me was Casey and the Sunshine Band, I knew that I was about to be replaced by a drum machine. And as it turned out, I was. We were playing four-piece and got fired. And I just didn't want to play disco music. I had a very personal dislike for disco.
I understand that. So you didn't like the music, but you also said that you had in fact done a disco night, not a disco demolition, but a disco exhibition or celebration at Sox Park previously, right?
Yeah, in 1977, which was, you know, except for the founding year of the Saints, 93, 1977, the Southside Hitmen, with Zisk and Gamble combining for 61 home runs, Eric Soderholm. Most exciting year I've ever had in the ballpark. The curtain calls, na na hey hey. But we did also a tribute to disco. And we drew 25,000. So even though I didn't care it, I was an equal opportunity guy. That year we didn't need as much help. I mean, in 79 when we did disco demolition, I mean, we were you know, in kind of the same boat that the White Sox were in this year when they finally acknowledged that it happened at their ballpark.
So a couple years.
39 years after the fact.
So a couple years then before you blew up the records, you actually put, what, stages out on the warning track. Is that right?
Yeah, it was very, it's interesting that you know that, John. I'm impressed. It is elaborate. That we put 25 polished platform out around the warning track and invited the finalists from every club in Chicago to come and dance and ultimately pick the winner. But it was astounding to me how quickly and how many people and just how many dance clubs there were for. I was blown away, but yeah, we did it 2 years before Disco Demolition. We honored the art of disco dancing.
So then a couple of years later, Doll's a big deal, and you say, hey, you want to do this. And I'm just wondering what your impetus was. You said that you didn't like disco music that much, but it was just, hey, let's find another way to get people at the ballpark, or did you shake your fist to disco music and say, I'll show you? Were you like Doll, or were you just trying to get people in the building?
I was, first and foremost, I was trying to get people in the building. That's what I, you know, figured that my job was. But I had a little personal stake in it. I really didn't care for it.
Yeah. Right.
I don't know that I was shaking my fist at it, but I, you know, it certainly was never made its way into the box in my car driving to work.
So how do you remember what happened that night then? How do you feel about that today?
Well, as you know, I spent a lot of time talking to Dave Hoekstra, the great writer, and I guess and also on your station once in a while. But Dave really wrote the definitive and about Disco Demolition. And I said, the thing that people don't realize is the mistake was mine, not for the idea so much as the cops. We always had a meeting with all of our off-duty security in the afternoon, and they came as was normal, and they said, how many people are you going to have? And this was a twi-night rescheduled doubleheader. And when I told them we were going to have 35,000 people, you would have thought that Penn and Teller had reunited. I mean, they were laughing. They thought that was not possible. We were not a very good ball club, way out already of the pennant race, didn't even qualify. And I said we were going to have 35,000 people. And at 3 o'clock, I looked out, and there were 35,000 people lined up. The problem was Old Comiskey had portable ticket booths, and there were so many people out. There were 60,000 people in the park by a half hour into game time. There were 40,000 people outside the park trying to get in. When they started to shake the portable ticket booths, I had to move some of the security from the field out to the front gates to get the kids to stop rattling the portable ticket booths. So crowd control is a misnomer. When they had the Stones the other night, if 75,000 people decided to take down Soldier Field, they would. But they never think as one. In this particular time, they looked and saw that I had moved 15 cops off the field, and they decided that they were going to run on the field, take control of their own field. Yeah. And they did. But up until that moment, I had thought, you know, we just set the all-time attendance record.
So until they stormed the field.
Chicago.
So before they, yeah, no kidding, before they stormed the field, you thought things were going well. I mean, it's an unruly or a large crowd, but until they stormed the field, it was, you thought you had a handle on it, right?
Yes, and the other thing that people tend to forget with crowd control is if Pearsall, who is not one of my favorite, was not one of my favorites. We had a particularly
Shoot, he just cut out.
But the fact is that we had several disagreements, but Pearsall, but had that been a baseball crowd and they'd been drinking, it would have been a real problem. But a lot of these kids were so stoned that it was very peaceful. Yes, people were throwing records occasionally on the field, but I gave away Reggie bars the first time they were ever given away, and they threw 20,000 of those at Reggie, you know. So, I mean, it it wasn't because we didn't collect the records. Some of the kids hid them when they came in.
Well, let me ask you about this, though, Mike. So a couple of weeks ago when we were recollecting more specifically the event, and to me, for a long time, it felt like the 85 Bears. It was just one of those great stories, great in quotes, you know, famous stories in Chicago that people talked about. But when they talk about it of late, they talk about it in different terms. They talk about maybe the racism or the homophobic attitudes that maybe were also driving that crowd. I don't know if you have anything to say about that. Were you paying attention to the conversations that were going on here in Chicago last few weeks?
I'm aware of it. I've heard, you know, one of the Gibb brothers had pointed that out once we were on a show together. But I can tell you, and in this case, since it could be a little bit controversial, it was my idea. It never occurred to me that I would be offending anyone. Would I do it today? Of course I wouldn't do it today. Through the lens darkly, I understand that things change. But I can assure you that 40 years ago, when it popped into my head, it was simply a very vertical promotion that we had already done a disco promotion. Now was a chance to do a thing for the rockers. And there was no discussion during the time. And I was on the field the whole time. Long after Dahl had left the building, I was still on the field. There was no discussion about it being any of those particularly distasteful, whether it was racist or homophobic, or it was simply a celebration of rock and roll versus disco dancing.
I got to go. Do you own the phrase disco demolition?
It's amazing. This is a great country where a guy can have an idea and Steve Dahl can copyrighted.
I'm afraid. I thought so. That's where that was going to go.
I was sorry I didn't get my peach from the T-shirt giveaway the other day. But at least they finally admitted that it really did happen on the South Side.
And it was your idea. All right. Nice to talk to you, Mike. When you come to Chicago, I'm sure you come through here once in a while. Swing through our studio, okay?
I would love to. I'm coming next week to speak. I'll give you a ring.
I hope so. Mike Veck is, by the way, the author, too, of a book that is actually really clever and fun. It's called Another Boring Derivative Piece of Crap Business Book.